I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that, honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. August 2014, Milton, New York. 2-year-old Mason was rushed into emergency, later dying after suffering severe physical abuse inside the home where he lived with his mother and her boyfriend. An autopsy later revealing extensive internal injuries and signs of ongoing trauma. His death shocked the small community, who demanded answers how this was allowed to happen to yet another child. This is Mason's story.
Prosecutors say little Mason died of blunt force trauma and that Stolle had beaten the child for several days at their home in the Walnut Lane Mobile Home Park in Marlboro. A babysitter arriving at the home Tuesday called 911 to report that she found Mason unresponsive. He was later pronounced dead at Vassar Hospital.
January 11, 2011. 31-year-old Louis DeCosmo was managing a gentleman's club in Poughkeepsie, New York. He was also the DJ, apparently. 18-year-old Caitlin Wolfert had just started working there. She was barely legal and was hired to work the juice bar, but would also sometimes dance if they were short on dancers that night. This was your unconventional romance, I guess you could call it. Man meets girl and they fall in lust, because Caitlin was pregnant almost immediately. Mason Louis DeCosmo was born November 29, 2011. And then almost to the day 2 years later, the couple had a second child, another little boy, Jackson, born in early December 2013. The two boys close in age and destined to be best friends for life. The relationship between Caitlin and Louis was a troubled one, and around the time of Jackson's birth, the authorities would become involved with the family. Then in May 2014, Caitlin would accuse Louis of having an affair, and she would confront him about it. Louis wouldn't address it the way Caitlin wanted him to, so the argument turned physical. She slapped him across the face. In response to this, Louis threatening to break the baby's crib. Because of that threat, Caitlin called the police. And even though he wasn't a danger to the couple's children, as is the standard procedure in domestic violence situations, Child Protective Services became involved and a case was opened. The very next day, Caitlin and Louis got into another argument, and police attended the home yet again. After this, it was clear the relationship wasn't working out and things weren't going to get better. They had unpaid rent in the thousands. So in early May 2014, Caitlin and Louis called Tom on their relationship, with Louis moving out of the family home. Caitlin wouldn't be single for long. July 2014, she would begin dating 26-year-old Kenneth Stolle, a father of 4 children from previous relationships. Only 1 week into dating, Caitlin would move herself and the two boys from Poughkeepsie to Milton, New York, moving into a mobile home with Kenneth at the Walnut Lane Mobile Home Park on Feller Road. Neighbours would later remember the toddler being rough and tumble, a sweet little boy with an outsized personality. They would often see him running around the front yard dressed in only a diaper. That he had a smile for everyone. He was happy to talk for hours about his love of trucks. It was all happening because then Caitlin was posting on social media that this was a fresh start for her and her sons, her new family. Because she and Kenneth were engaged and she was starting a new job. She was working in administration for United Healthcare. And since Kenneth was unemployed, he agreed to watch Jackson and Mason while she was at work. The perfect arrangement. and everything seemed to be going well for the young family at first. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. August 5th, 2014, just a month after the family moved in with Kenneth Starley, a call would come into emergency services. Caitlin's sister, Mason's aunt, had just arrived at the home to babysit her nephews, and she noticed that Mason was unresponsive. She would be the one to call 911. When first responders arrived, they found that 2-year-old Mason was already cold, stiff, pale, and he was covered in bruises. It was clear that he was already dead and had been for some time. Paramedics still doing their due diligence, and they took Mason to the nearby Vassar Brothers Medical Centre in Poughkeepsie. Here, he was officially pronounced dead. New York medical examiner Dr. Jennifer Hammers was entrusted with Mason's autopsy. Dr. Hammers discovered that the toddler had more than 80 separate injuries. These included dozens of bruises, a broken rib, and internal damage to many of his organs, including his eyes and brain. Mason's pancreas was also torn, and he had a laceration on his liver. A toxicology test was also performed, and it was discovered Mason had traces of heroin in his body. Mason's lower lip and frenulum were separated, the frenulum being the piece of skin that connects the lip to the gum, and that this tear appeared to have occurred within a day of Mason's death. Some kind of forceful trauma to the top lip, a slap to the face, whether sheer force or even potentially a direct impact. Unquote. Mason's brain injuries were classic for what's seen in a child that is shaken, where there is an impact to the head occurring in the process of being shaken. Dr. Hammer's recording in her report that other injuries to Mason could come from slow force, such as pushing the abdomen against the spinal column or in a car accident. Cause of death was determined to be the result of blood impact to the head. Manner of death was homicide. When Mason's babysitter and Caitlin's boyfriend, Kenneth Starley, was questioned by police, he obviously insisted he had nothing to do with the 2-year-old's death. But the more investigators questioned him, the more the inconsistencies in Kenneth's stories, yes, stories plural, started to show. Kenneth admitted he'd been playing with Mason and his brother inside the home, July 29th, 2014, so 6 days before Mason died. In Kenneth's version of events, Mason came at him. This made Kenneth angry, so he threw a pillow at the toddler, this basically knocking Mason over. He fell to the ground and hit his head, after which Mason just lies there crying. But he really isn't moving and he's not getting up. Kenneth said he went over, picked Mason up and put him on the couch. That something was wrong after this. The little boy wasn't acting right. That his eyes were looking funny. He wasn't keeping down food and he had problems with his balance and coordination. This was almost a week before Mason died. August 2nd, 2014, Mason had been injured by Kenneth yet again. He claimed to have been tickling the toddler when all of a sudden Mason had bitten him on the finger. In an attempt to get him to stop, Kenneth said he pushed down on the 2-year-old's chest with his leg, pushing the boy into the bed so hard that the bed actually broke, meaning Mason had been injured for days before his body succumbed to what must have been unimaginable pain. Once the authorities had the results of Mason's autopsy, Kenneth Starley was placed under arrest and he was charged with second-degree murder. While Mason's mother, Caitlin, wasn't home at the time her son was found dead, she had clearly been in the home during the time that the little boy was being abused. The medical examiner dating some of Mason's injuries as occurring as long as 10 to 14 days before his death. Because of this, Caitlin Wolfert was taken into questioning with investigators. She described her son as a happy little boy who was always very tired. She also told investigators that Mason had vomited up a greenish-black substance that was milk-like in texture. And then about a week prior to his death, Caitlin believed Mason passed what looked like a blood clot. When confronted with the likelihood her boyfriend Kenneth Starley was responsible for Mason dying, Caitlin broke down in tears. She flat out denied there was any chance Kenneth could have ever harmed her child in any way. At one point during her official police interview, the mother was asked about Mason's injuries and she actually laughed. She said, "Mason falls down all the time." Apparently, she considered taking the toddler to the hospital since he hadn't been acting right in the days leading up to his death. But ultimately, Caitlin decided not to seek medical attention for Mason, since she was in the midst of a custody battle with his father, Louis DeCosmo, and she didn't want to risk CPS being notified of Mason's injuries. Caitlin then went on to say that she actually preferred holistic healing and medicine, that she'd rather treat Mason's injuries at home naturally, even after she saw her son was passing blood clots, because according to her, he seemed fine after that. Caitlin had messaged a friend of hers a few days before Mason died, warning her that the little boy looked like he'd been hit by a bus. Following her interview with police, Caitlin was released, and she was never charged in connection with her son's death or prior abuse, or medical neglect as well, in my opinion, because she knew her son was injured and did nothing to save his life. Caitlin was, however, accused by the Dutchess County Department of Community and Family Services of child abuse and neglect, because Mason's mother was not the only one who hadn't done their job in keeping the sweet boy safe. May 2014. A case was opened with Child Protection Services. However, this same report was closed just before Mason died. The accusations mentioned in this report was deemed unsubstantiated. Child Protection not really doing their due diligence, and they failed to look into Kenneth's background and his role in Mason and his brother's lives. Had they actually, you know, done their job here, it would have been discovered. Kenneth Starley had been named in two prior confirmed reports of child abuse out of Dutchess County. Members of Mason's family had also made their own reports to CPS in the past. In May 2014, Mason's paternal aunt contacted them, saying she feared Caitlin was not capable of being a single parent. Mason's cousin also contacted CPS a month later, in June 2014, because she noticed that Mason had a black eye. But both cases were quickly closed, with Mason's injuries being blamed on the toddler's clumsiness. But the thing was, Mason wasn't the only child in the household who was being mistreated. At the time of Mason's death, Jackson, who was still only very much a baby at 7 months old. So when Mason died, and the authorities were doing their investigation into what happened to him, Jackson was removed from Caitlin's custody and given a well-being check by doctors. And this baby was discovered to be covered in bruises. Caitlin also refused to give police the boy's father Lewis's phone number, so Jackson could be placed in his care, at least temporarily, until her involvement here could be determined. So instead, Jackson was placed in foster care, until CPS could track Lewis down themselves the next day. Not long after Mason died, Caitlin would get married to Kenneth, you know, the man in jail for murdering her son, and she then began fighting for custody back of Jackson. January 2015. A family court judge ruled Caitlin Wolfert was guilty for abusing and neglecting both Mason and Jackson. At the same time, it was determined there wasn't enough evidence against her for a severe abuse finding, because the Dutchess County DCFS had failed to prove depraved indifference on her part, and because of that, Caitlin was granted bi-weekly supervised visitation with baby Jackson, while Lewis maintained full custody. Now, Lewis and the rest of the DeCosmo family were completely outraged by this, Lewis publicly saying he was disgusted by the judge's ruling. He did not believe that Caitlin should be in their surviving son's life at all. He actually wanted her parental rights terminated, that he would only feel vindicated once she was sitting in jail next to her now husband. Lewis, along with the Dutchess County DCFS, would end up appealing the dismissal of the severe abuse petition against Caitlin. Sometime later, the Ulster County Court determined that the Dutchess County Family Court was wrong when it had previously dismissed the allegations against her. The appeals court went on to say that Mason's younger brother had been severely abused. Not only that, but there was some evidence to support there may have been also some sexual abuse occurring as well. It's not clear in my research if this ruling affected Caitlin's visitation with Jackson. I would hope so. August 29, 2015. Ulster County Court in front of presiding judge Donald Williams. Kenneth Starley's six-day trial began. The prosecution painting a picture of what they called the systematic beating and torture of Mason DeCosmo by Kenneth's hands. That at the time of Mason's death, he had 450 millilitres of blood in his abdomen due to internal bleeding. And this is almost half the blood in the toddler's body. The medical examiner who conducted Mason's autopsy, Dr. Jennifer Hammers, testified that if the bleeding happened quickly, it would have taken minutes to an hour for Mason to die. But if this bleeding was slow, it would have taken up to 4 hours of suffering. Dr. Hammers testifying, the injury sustained by Mason was very highly unlikely to be caused by a child falling down, because a 2-year-old is very low to the ground and doesn't have far to fall. Seeing the photos of the boy's injuries appeared to be difficult for the jurors and spectators in the public gallery. Jurors could be seen shifting in their chairs and wiping their eyes. One covered her face with her hand and blouse to avoid viewing the photos. Kenneth, seated next to his attorney, seemingly to intentionally avoid looking at the photos. Kenneth's defense contended that the injuries were not due to abuse, but rather due to the fact that Mason was a busy little boy who was prone to hurting himself, showing the jurors pictures of Caitlin's home in disarray to suggest the boy could have fallen over items around the house. Among the prosecution's witnesses, Sean Lewis, who was a neighbour living at the same trailer park as the family, Sean testified seeing Kenneth slamming Mason into his baby car seat, slamming him so hard that Mason's head hit the roof of the car. Kenneth's friend Katie Morehouse spent the day 5 days before Mason's death with the family. Katie testified that Kenneth brought Mason into the trailer to change the boy's diaper while everyone else was outside. When they came back out, Mason's head was lolling and his eyes were rolling. Katie said she suggested taking Mason to the hospital, even offering to drive them herself. But Kenneth declined, insisting that Mason was fine, that he'd only rolled off the bed. And then, Caitlin's supervisor at United Healthcare testified that she encouraged the young mother to get her son medical attention the day he died. And when Caitlin was worried about losing her job for missing work, she was reassured there'd be no repercussions and that her job was safe. Now, this is in stark contrast to Caitlin's testimony from earlier in the trial. Caitlin claimed that she did ask to leave work early, after she got a phone call from Kenneth stating that Mason needed to go to the hospital. According to Caitlin, Kenneth informed her that Mason had fallen on the floor in the fetal position, and when he had gotten back up, Mason was clutching his stomach and wanted to go to bed. Caitlin claimed she asked her supervisor if it would be held against her if she left work early, since she was still in the training period, and she was allegedly told that it would. Not wanting to lose her job, she stayed, because according to Caitlin, she needed that job to support her family. Caitlin went on to testify against Kenneth, that she had come home from work and had seen several small bruises, as well as a black eye on her eldest son days before his death. She said the bruises were from falling when he had gotten off the toilet, that Kenneth had told her the black eye was from Mason falling out of the family's van. Then 2 days before the toddler's death, Caitlin said that Mason had fallen off a slide at the elementary school playground onto his stomach. She claimed that Mason started acting sick soon after, but she thought everything was okay, that she never saw many of the large bruises on her son's body, including one that was right by his genitals. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. At the end of Kenneth's trial, the jury of 7 women and 5 men deliberated for just under 8 hours, and they found Kenneth Starley guilty of all charges. June 4, 2015, Kenneth was sentenced to 25 years to life. He showed little emotion when the verdict was read.
Tears flowed in the courtroom Friday at Ulster County Court as Kenneth Stolle was found guilty of murder in the second degree, depraved indifference, in the death of Mason DeCosmo, a 2-year-old found dead in his home in Marlborough in August 2014. Stolle was charged with the murder after police say they found bruises and abrasions. They say that Stolle beat Mason to death without any regard for his life, which means the charge of depraved indifference. Mason's mother, Caitlin Wolfert, was crying in the courtroom after the verdict was read Friday.
How did you feel when you heard the verdict?
She lost custody of her other son, Jackson DeCosmo, to father Louis DeCosmo.
August 18, 2014, Mason DeCosmo was buried at St. Peter's Cemetery in Poughkeepsie, New York. His father, Lewis, is blind. He would speak at his son's funeral and speak how he remembered Mason climbing up on the couch and tumbling back onto the cushions, that he remembered his laugh and sometimes still felt him touching his back. Mason would later be described by those who knew and loved him as an energetic, spunky and charismatic little guy. Mason loved dinosaurs, bubbles, trucks and cars. So obviously the movie Cars was on high rewatch in the household. Mason also enjoyed listening to music, had a fascination with motorcycles. And for Halloween, just before his death, Mason spoke of his desire to dress up as Marta from the movie Cars. Unfortunately, this incredible memory never got the chance to happen. That was stolen away from Mason by someone who should have been there to protect him. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.